I'm John Kroll. Coming up on No Limits, we will talk about the tragic problem of human trafficking. There is debate about how widespread the practice is in the United States of dragging human beings into a modern form of slavery, generally for the purposes of sexual exploitation. But there is no debate about how devastating and debasing human trafficking is. It often is the dark side of big events, such as the Super Bowl. We will discuss human trafficking with our guests, Indiana Attorney General Greg Zeller, Exodus Refugee Information Executive Director Carlene Miller, and Survivor and Victims Advocate Teresa Flores. You can join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the problem of human trafficking. We're fortunate to have as our guests Indiana Attorney General Greg Zeller. Attorney General Zeller, welcome to the program.
Now it's good to be with you, John.
It's good to have you here. We also have with us Carlene Miller, who is the Executive Director of Exodus Refugee Immigration. That's a long title. I'm going to struggle getting through that, I know. Welcome to the program, Carlene.
Thank you for having me as well.
It's good to have you here. And Survivor and Victims Advocate Teresa Flores. Teresa, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the program, join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to start first just by asking, start with a definition of what we consider human trafficking. Attorney General Greg Zeller, I think I'll start with you on that, maybe what the legal definition is. And obviously there's also some movement in the state legislature right now that perhaps you could talk about how that's going to change things.
Well, John, the definition of human trafficking goes beyond just what people may think, the importation of young women for prostitution from different countries. A lot of the victims end up being runaways, so they're being transported between states. The trafficking is really the people who are behind this heinous crime. So when you look at the prostitutes as really the victims of the traffickers, you start to get this sense of what human trafficking is. So they're moved from city to city. They often come to large sporting events. That's why we're focused on it before the Super Bowl. But this really goes on a day-to-day basis. But the legal definition is really that transportation of prostitutes between cities, and those are the traffickers that were the focus of our attention.
Carlene Miller, what definition does your group work with in terms of human trafficking?
Yeah, well, there's a federal law in place mm-hmm. that's been in place since 2000 and then has mm-hmm. been reissued several times over the years. And really, we're looking at folks both for sexual exploitation and labor who've been induced into servitude through force, fraud, or coercion. It does not need to have physical force. It could be psychological force, but it's anyone that is induced into these acts, could be as a servant or as a laborer or into sexual exploitation through force, fraud, or coercion. And for minors, they do not have to meet the definition of force, fraud, and coercion. Any person under 18 who is induced into sexual exploitation is considered a victim of human trafficking.
And Teresa, I think I'm going to change the question a little bit for you. You are a survivor and a victims advocate. You tell us a little bit about the path that brought you to the work that you're doing right now.
I had grown up as just a normal kid and actually throughout Indiana, and had found my family moving to Michigan, and was quickly targeted by a group of older guys, and they used one of the typical paths of of the blackmail, where they target a girl, they befriend her, spend a lot of time with her, and then, in my case, drugged me and raped me and then took pictures and blackmailed me with those and had to perform certain sex acts for several years to earn those back. So when you have a child that's under 18 and she's involved in any commercial sex act, being a sex act, stripping, pornography, videos, any of that, and she's under 18, it's automatically considered human trafficking, so by federal definition. So I went to, 20 years. I was able to escape that after several years, and then went to college and tried my best to heal from it. But when I finally went to a conference on human trafficking, I learned that what had happened to me was encompassed in that definition, and had never known that, even, having a master's degree in social work, had no idea that. So it was then that I said, if I don't know this, how many others don't know that, there is really no such thing as child prostitution. There's no such thing as teen prostitutes. It's really human trafficking. So that's when I kind of set up, set my mission in full speed ahead to explain that to people.
Well, and I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Teresa, I want to stay with you for just a second. I mean, you talked about healing with this. Could you talk about what that process is like? And then I want to take us, we like to get news that you can use out of this, that if you are in a situation, if you're someone who is listening to this, or you know someone, you are listening to this and you know someone who is in a situation like this, what the steps that person should take to get out. But how did you go about the healing first?
It actually was very difficult, because there really is very few counselors that are trained in, and especially back then, on knowing the signs of human trafficking or post-traumatic stress and things like that. So basically, I used my college curriculum, being a social worker, to do a lot of self-therapy. And I'd always searched for counselors. I went to a rape crisis center and just really just tried to piece it all together. And I didn't want that, what happened to me, to affect the rest of my life. It's like they had won those 2 years of me, but I was bound and determined not to let them have my entire life. And by getting a college degree and then actually working as a social worker here in Indianapolis, it helped give me a purpose to help others. And finally, by writing my book, it gave me back my voice, because you try to tell people what's going on, but nobody believes you and nobody wants to hear you.
And so, what is the name of your book? You're allowed to plug it.
Okay.
Actually,
The Slave Across the Street.
Okay. And people can find it where?
On Amazon.
Okay. Carlene Miller, I want to pick up on the second point of my question here, which is if someone's listening to this program right now and they are trapped in a situation like that, what steps should they take to get out? Or if more likely, if you're observing this, if you know someone, and I know the Attorney General is going to have some thoughts on that, because he did a press conference on exactly that subject this morning. But
we always tell people, if you're in immediate danger, then the first line of defense is to call 911, because you can get immediate help that way. We also point people towards the national hotline, because they are a clearinghouse for these calls. They're trained, and they know who all the service providers are across the country, and they're keeping statistics. So it's really important that we use the national hotline, and that number is 1-888-373-7888.
Could you repeat that again?
Sure. So people get it's 1-888-373-7888. And that's a federally funded hotline, and it runs through the Polaris Project.
Okay. And Attorney General Zeller, what would you recommend if someone is trapped in this situation, or more likely, if you know of something? I mean, what should they do? Or you suspect something? I mean, that I suspect inhibits people occasionally. Is, I don't know this for sure, but something just doesn't quite look right to me here about this situation. Like, I'm presuming there were people in Teresa's case who kind of observed what was going on, but really didn't know how to help or act, or if, in fact, they should trust what their instincts were.
Well, we've been working with IPATH and a number of people in law enforcement. We're doing these trainings on exactly what people should do. We first go to those who are most likely to see things. So we were doing trainings for cab drivers throughout the city of Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. We did a national training where we brought in people and did training for our law enforcement. So again, they start looking at prostitutes as victims. They may not recognize that they're actually, or they look at prostitutes as criminals, and they may not see that they're really the victims. So they need to get behind that and recognize the telltale signs of human trafficking. So we've also reached out to the hospitality community, some of the motel owners around Indianapolis area. So we've been trying to work to educate people as to identifying those telltale signs, and then they should either call the hotline or call law enforcement, who are able to both rescue the victim and do something about the traffickers.
Should we, I mean, to some degree, I have to ask this question. Do we need to change the law? I mean, right now you're right. Prostitution is a crime, and the heaviest penalties fall on the prostitute rather than the person who procures the services. Should we reverse that equation in some way?
Well, we did, as part of an effort that attorneys general in each of the 50 states are making, we reviewed Indiana's laws to see whether there were gaps in our statutory coverage. We did identify particular areas where prosecutors lack the tools. There's now Senate Bill 4, which has 50 of the 50 senators all signed on. So we have identified some weaknesses. Mm-hmm. But the other parts where law enforcement and prosecutors have, I think, for too long looked at prostitutes as criminals, and very few of them, I think, if the truth be known, really brought into the trade on their own. So years and years later, they may have lost their way. But I do think the early age that these young women are brought into it. Some of them, it's it's such a stigma that people think of it in a certain way, and it really requires us to think anew about it, and that includes law enforcement and the criminal justice system.
We are talking about human trafficking here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to ask a question here first, and we may have to talk about this for a little while, but I'm going to throw it out there. How widespread is this problem or practice? And then the second part of that is, who are the human traffickers? Is there a profile? I think I'll start with Carlene Miller on that one.
I think, it's very hard to know how many folks are in these situations because it is a crime in which people don't speak out. Like Teresa mentioned, she was afraid, and there was good reason for her to be afraid. Many times it's young people that are involved in this, or it's people who are from other countries who may not speak the language or may be undocumented or may have all kinds of threats made against them or their families. And so it's very difficult for people to speak out. Just like with domestic violence and sexual assault many years ago, people don't know it's a crime. Teresa didn't know it was a crime. And so many people suffer in silence. Internationally, we believe that it's a terrible crime that's going on. Maybe more than 27 million people. Mm-hmm. Many of them are children involved in human trafficking.
So basically about the size of the city of Mexico City or whatever. I mean, that many people affected.
Very possibly.
Yeah.
And it's split pretty well between labor, although labor seems to be more so than sexual exploitation. Mm-hmm. And of course, as you can imagine, women and girls are the most vulnerable to human trafficking. Here in the United States, we're just starting to understand it since 2000. So it's really a growing bank of knowledge and statistics that we're looking at, and our databases aren't aligned with each other yet. But we expect that there might be, 40 to 50,000 people trafficked in our country each year, and certainly many more vulnerable to trafficking.
We are talking about the problem of human trafficking here on No Limits with our guests, Indiana Attorney General Greg Zeller, Carlene Miller, who is the Executive Director of the Exodus Refugee Immigration Program, Teresa Flores, who is a survivor and victims advocate. We're talking about how widespread the problem is and are going to continue discussing that, so please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the problem of human trafficking with our guest, Indiana Attorney General Greg Zeller, Carlene Miller, who is the executive director of the Exodus Refugee Immigration Program, and Teresa Flores, who is a survivor and victims advocate. We would love to have you join the conversation. Please call us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We were talking right before the break about how widespread this problem is and who the traffickers are. From a law enforcement perspective, Attorney General Zeller, how widespread is it? How many resources are committed to it? And do you have a profile of the people who engage in human trafficking?
Well, I think one of the biggest problems we have is that we've never tracked the statistics. So the FBI, when they track serious crime in the United States, they've never categorized human trafficking. So there's going to be some unknowns as to the exact numbers. I do, you know, in working with other attorneys general, I've talked to the two who hosted Super Bowls, and they tell me they had significant numbers. I know in Texas there were 81 cases where he thought that that was a firm number of what they had seen. But there is no statistics that really back this up. It's raised some doubts in people's minds. So I think that's one of the things we have to fight is this suspicion that it's being hyped or somehow being exaggerated.
Well, is it a little bit like, you know, for years, because rape victims would not and were almost as victimized by the aftermath as they were by the crime itself, the rape itself, wouldn't come forward, and it was a tremendously underreported crime. Is there a similar dynamic here?
I think that's a good example, and it is the type of thing that the victims don't come forward. I mean, that's they're really being held as slaves. I mean, I think the victims who've recovered that come forward can really put a little bit of that kind of mindset. But the reasons that they're not coming forward, a lot of times we don't treat people as victims, that we treat them as criminals. So I think that also pushes back. So we have to adjust our law enforcement strategies, working with law enforcement and prosecutors. We really need to change the dynamic. In terms of who is the profile, I think we're seeing a shift away from the local pimps that people are kind of used to thinking of to people who now travel between cities. There's much stronger organized rings. These are people who are well-financed. There's an awful lot of money involved in this. So I think it poses less of a danger.
How much money involved?
Well, we're now seeing some of the people that have been involved in the drug trade, which has a high risk factor because you get caught and you go away for many years to prison.
Or your competition kills you.
That's right. There's a lot of dangers involved in the drug trade. This seems to be a safer trade. People have not been as aggressive about going after the traffickers. So we may not know exactly how much money, but the idea of being lured out of the drug trade to be a human trafficker kind of gives you the sense that it's very lucrative.
And are they, when you say they travel from city to city, I mean, are these folks that, you know, are there signs we ought to be looking for to try to figure out who somebody is who might be engaged in this sort of activity?
Well, that's one of the reasons that when we did the training for the law enforcement, the taxi drivers, and the hospitality industry, we were targeting the people that are most likely to come in contact with victims. So I think one of the things that I was talking about earlier today is that we've noticed an uptick on the number of hits, the ads posted on Backpage soliciting female escorts. Now, that's code. Most people understand that's how you're going to find a prostitute. Attorneys general have been very aggressive to go after Backpage, who are really one of the stronger purveyors of these ads and really make the most money. So over the last 3 weeks, we've seen a large uptick in the number of ads posted seeking female escorts online.
Well, I'm going to ask one other kind of question here where we talk about the press conference. I thought the other part of that that was interesting is that you were really trying to engage a kind of social pressure, too, that you want people who think that, you know, basically want men to who hear other men talking about these experiences to indicate their disapproval. Why is that?
Well, as part of the National Association of Attorneys General, who have what we call our four pillars of hope, the president of our association, Attorney General McKenna from Washington State, will be my guest during the Super Bowl. He's asked a number of us to take leadership roles in the four pillars. And the fourth pillar, which I'm heading up, is really focused on ending the demand for prostitutes. And it's a conversation that I'll admit is awkward. It's uncomfortable. But men are the ones who have to stand up and be better. We can't listen to the conversation at a sports bar, at a convention, or in at some place where men congregate and listen to the stories and not say anything. So I think to change public opinion, to change social acceptance of something, I had three football players, Tarik Glenn, Jeff Saturday, and Tom Kapanzik. And each of them spoke very eloquently about we need to be better men. We need to stand up and say something. When we hear this in conversation as if it was okay, we have to let people know it's not okay. We have to end the demand that fuels both prostitution and human trafficking.
We are talking about the problem of human trafficking here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Teresa Flores, you're a survivor and a victim's advocate. I want you, let's pretend we live in a kind of back to the future world here or whatever, where you could go back in time. With the experiences you have now, what would you say to the young woman you were who, you know, found herself in a horribly compromised position? These guys, you know, with embarrassing photographs of you and who were blackmailing you, what would you say to her about how to deal with that situation or how to get out of it, how to escape the consequences?
That's a really hard question.
Well, and I guess what I'm saying, we can reframe that. What would you say to a young woman today who's in right. a similar situation? Because I'm sure today, if anything, not knowing how long ago this was for you, but right. I'm sure part of the threat is, you know, these photos are going to be up on Facebook or distributed, right. you know, 10 seconds after you say no to us. So, and everybody in the free world's going to see them.
Yeah, and you know, there are kids that are in this exact same situation right now, right this very minute, right here in Indianapolis, living at home as I did. It's happening in every zip code, and they're looking for somebody to talk to, somebody that's going, they're just wishing somebody would see the signs and say, hey, can I help you? Because they don't have it within them, they're a kid, to say, hey, this is going on, can you help me? They're just wishing that somebody will notice the signs and offer them help. I would just tell them, you know, that the likelihood of that is very small, and you need to help yourself. You need to call this toll-free number. You need to find a teacher or, you know, an officer or just somebody, a waitress is, you know, who I ended up talking to that worked third shift in an inner city diner in Detroit. Mm-hmm. But just you need to find somebody that can you can trust and that will help you, because it's not going to go away. I mean, the likelihood is you'll die in this. So I always had hope that, well, the next time they'll give me the pictures back. You know, the next time it'll be different. But there never was that. They just need to know that you've got to reach out to somebody, that there is hope that they can get out of this.
Well, and let me say, on the off chance that there is a neighbor or mm-hmm. a teacher, somebody who's observing this and saying it's not right. How should that person get involved? If I think with a student that there is a, you know, a system of exploitation, you know, how should I go about inquiring of that student or saying, look, I've noticed this, you know, how can
right.
I help you?
They need to trust their gut instinct. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they second guess it, like, oh, that couldn't possibly happen to a kid here that lives in Zionsville, you know, mm-hmm. but, you know, it can. So they need to trust their gut instinct and really start protecting our kids, stepping out of their comfort zone. We just kind of dismiss it and think it's a bad kid or they have bad parents or they're just having trouble adjusting as teenage hormones. But really trusting that gut instinct and saying, you know what, I might be wrong. So what? What if I'm right? You know, and calling that 1-800 number or just reaching out to the kid and saying, here's my cell phone number. Call me anytime. What I think is we need to start being nosy neighbors again. We've really disconnected.
Get back to small town.
Get back to small town. Aunt B's. You know, everybody knows where everybody's at in their business, and that's okay.
Real quickly, could you give the 800 number again? It sounds like that's a real practical piece.
It is, and we also encourage people to contact our task force. So I'm the director of the victim services piece of that, but the attorneys general mentioned IPATH, and we have a website, so I can give both of those.
That would be great.
Because we have had situations. We had teachers identify victims of trafficking in our city, in one of the most affluent areas of our city, and three children were rescued from being domestic servants. So it does matter if kids talk to trusted adults.
Okay.
So that number is 1-888-373-7888. And
the website,
our website is www.indianaagainsttrafficking.org.
Thank you very much. We are talking about human trafficking here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Benjamin, welcome to the program.
I'm asking if legal prostitution in places like Nevada, I think Las Vegas has, if that has a positive or a negative or neutral effect on human trafficking.
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Benjamin. Well, I'll start probably, Teresa. I saw you shaking your head first and most adamantly. What is your feeling about that?
That is a growing idea that people in the United States have seemed to be going to is, you know, what, let's just legalize it and, you know, it'll be much better. And that's not the case. Sweden had done that as well and noticed that child prostitution and violence against women quadrupled within a year of doing that. So we know that that's not the answer. The ideal situation, number one, would be to arrest the men that are procuring the prostitutes equally as, you know, and seeing the women as victims, because it is against the law to purchase sex. But what Sweden did was they made it illegal to purchase sex. They knew that there would be pimps and there would be women that are vulnerable and they would be trying to sell them. And so they saw them truly as the victim and didn't arrest them, but they started arresting the men for purchasing it. And they noticed that the cases went from 2,500 in a year to 1,500. So that would be the answer.
And do you see, I asked this question of the Attorney General a few minutes ago. I mean, would you change the American legal code and say, basically, let's let the burden of this fall more heavily on the procurer rather than the person, the prostitute? Would you change that, Teresa? No, I'm going to ask Teresa, if I could, real quick. Teresa Flores.
I don't think that will ever happen in our country.
But should it?
Oh, definitely. From a victim's perspective, a woman's perspective, yeah, and demand. This is sheer demand of it.
And how about you, Carlene Miller? Do you think we ought to change the way the law is drafted there?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is a crime that is all demand-driven, so across the world. So you have to address demand.
And I know, Attorney General Greg Zeller, that you also have to live in a world of what's possible. And I think Teresa Flores has made the point here that that will not happen in this country. But are there steps we could take in terms of the code? When I asked you before, you really said, well, we're trying to deal with this by training and stepping up our efforts. But are there changes in the law that would make it more helpful that you might recommend?
Well, I do think that the first steps are going to be having law enforcement and prosecutors and those of us in the criminal justice system really address the demand side and looking at the men who purchase sex and taking a different look at the prostitutes who may may have been brought in years and years ago. So I do think taking a different look from with the same code that we have, but in terms of what we need to change, I think there may need to be stronger penalties against the men who end up fueling this. I think the problems that we have is that we have, you know, when you mentioned that it is legal in a number of states.
Yeah, and I was going to bring you back to Benjamin's question here, because I realized I did not ask you that one. Should
it
be legalized?
Well, we do have legalized, but you haven't seen it spread. I mean, mm-hmm. it's been in place for over two decades, but it's not spread to other states. We still have movies like Pretty Woman or something like that where people have this glorified Hollywood image that a prostitute is like a businesswoman that could have a happy ending. Mm-hmm. Well, those things go to kind of reinforce this notion that it's somehow socially acceptable. What we were doing today with the football players is to standing up and saying that we have to change that attitude. Men particularly have to stand up and look at it as something that we need to address between ourselves. And we need to just let people know that it's not ever going to be socially acceptable. It's not something that we should allow to continue.
We are talking about human trafficking here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Josie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. Certainly. Your question, please.
Was just curious as to what kind of volunteer efforts do you guys have suggestions for or opportunities for volunteers or anybody who's interested in helping some of these women transition out of that horrible, horrible situation? I'll take my question off there.
Great. Thank you very much for the call. Thank you, Josie. Well, Carlene Miller, I'll start that one with you. How can people who want to combat this problem find a way to help the women involved? And, you know, in some cases, we made the case, it's often children, too. What are your opportunities for?
I think this is a great question. There's a wide range of things people can do, whether you're here in Indianapolis or other places around the state. I think the first thing is become educated about the problem. I think you can become an advocate and be talking to your legislatures. There's opportunities to educate others so that we become all informed about this. I think volunteering is something that a lot of people want to do. We have a network of folks that meet regularly and have, particularly because of the Super Bowl, we've gotten like 50 different organizations that are working towards volunteer efforts to get the message out. And so if you're interested, please contact us at the website I mentioned.
Go ahead and mention it again. They may not have had a pencil
okay.
or a pen handy.
So it's IndianaAgainstTrafficking.org. Mm-hmm. And either at the Julian Center or Exodus, we're partners in this, so we can plug you in somehow into our efforts. And I think we should all also look at our own purchasing of goods and our own involvement, even, you know, with where are things coming from and are we contributing in any way to the demand? And I'm not talking necessarily about the demand of sexual exploitation,
yeah,
but labor trafficking, which is important to me too.
Or whatever,
right, exactly.
We are talking about human trafficking here on No Limits. We're fortunate to have as our guests Indiana Attorney General Greg Zeller, Carlene Miller, the Executive Director of Exodus Refugee Immigration, and Teresa Flores, a survivor and victims advocate. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about human trafficking with our guest, Indiana Attorney General Greg Zeller, Carlene Miller, who is the executive director of Exodus Refugee Immigration, and Teresa Flores, a survivor and victims advocate. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a tweet, actually, from a listener named Laura that I think is pertinent and probably reminds me that I need to ask very basic questions at times, that sometimes I let the important ones slip by me. And she says, your guests keep talking about recognizing the signs. What are the signs? And that's really what specifically what should they be looking for? I'll start with Teresa Flores on that one.
Well, my specialty is as children, the domestic minor sex trafficking. So it would obviously be children that are hanging around an older guy, if, you know, 4 or 5 years older is a big red flag, especially combined with other things. Maybe she's starting to use drugs. Maybe she doesn't come from a family with a lot of, you know, financial means, but she's showing up with her nails done and a new cell phone by him and a Coach purse. Her grades are dropping, becoming very withdrawn. If it's somebody that's checking into a hotel, which we do specialize in hotels as well, you know, a girl checking in with an older guy, maybe coming in with a Kroger grocery bag that's her clothes are in or no clothes at all, just very withdrawn. So there's definitely a lot of different signs. They can go on the PolarisProject.org website for a whole list of them.
We are talking about human trafficking here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Pat, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Your question, please.
Well, I don't know that this is sexual.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's okay.
But when you go to a nail salon, all the women, all the workers speak no English. So if you wanted to talk to them or give them an opportunity to speak to you, there would be no way you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
The person who speaks English, he can talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine these girls live together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very concerned for the implications that that has in terms of the way of life. And I just feel... But then again, I don't know. It has to be, would that be governmental or legal? Is there some way that these owners, these bosses, can be obliged to offer English to these girls? I don't know. But okay. I felt like your program today prompted me to think about it.
Well, thank you very much, Pat. We will take this up right now. And let me just ask that question. You know, in a situation like that, does that make it somewhat harder to determine, you know, and I'm sure that's also can be in a worst case scenario. I don't want to accuse everyone who owns a nail salon of breaking the law here, but or any other business where you will have a, you know, an immigrant workforce or whatever, that necessarily they're exploitive. But is that an issue that some of the time the people who are being exploited don't have the language resources to access the help they need? Carlene, I'll start with you on that. Carlene Miller.
Yes, definitely. The caller is right on. We have seen across the country cases in nail salons or businesses like that, and it is a vulnerable population because they may not know the laws. They may have their immigration status held against them. The person who is running the operation may hold on to their documents. Not all nail salons, obviously, are in this situation, but there are cases where we might get alarmed. We might see things like the girls live in the studio, or they eat there, or they're moved back and forth as a group, or one person answers all the questions for them. That, you know, may be a sign that something more is going on. It does make it hard to investigate often for our officers because we may not have people that speak that language to get in there. But our officers are pretty good here locally. They're trained in this, and our labor folks are trained as well. And so if people are concerned, they can let us know, and then we can go from there to see if there is something going on in those locations.
Attorney General Greg Zeller, is that something, a situation that you investigate or you throw a lot of resources at?
Well, between the nail salons and I think some of the massage parlors, we have found people that clearly could have issues with their immigration status. So you bring in a workforce that's illegal to begin with, it's easy to see how they could be taken advantage of either for free labor or even worse, they could be exploited sexually. So those are kind of high risk areas, and I think there's been more and more attention brought to them. So it's something that law enforcement and the prosecutors are taking a hard look at.
We are talking about human trafficking here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Victor, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Your question, please.
Yeah, so I'm a newspaper reporter. I work at the Star. Last fall, I wrote a story about prostitution.
Okay.
And I was contacted the day after it ran by a woman who works as an escort.
Okay.
Who's from the north side.
Okay.
Now, during this, you know, as reporters, we try to keep a distance and all that, but this woman seemed to be crying for help.
Okay.
And so I sort of took it on myself to try and find some services for her and set her up with them. And frankly, I found nothing that would really work for her in Indianapolis. I ended up going to some other states where there were some more things. There was something in Chicago that had been closed down. But there was really no, like, service for prostitutes here in the city.
What sort of service were you talking about? Counseling services or legal counsel?
There are these homes that sort of take girls who are working the streets and put them in some sort of, you know, I guess a dorm style system. They make soap at one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was finding those. I think they were somewhere in the South. I want to say North Carolina or something.
Okay.
Anyway, I didn't find anything. I ended up, you know, calling some pastors who I knew who agreed to help her out. It turned out, you know, the woman was having a temporary crisis. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, is still doing what she was doing. But, you know, I tried to give her some phone numbers and tried to get her some help and just didn't find a lot here.
Good question. Thank you for the call, Victor.
You know, there's one more thing, though,
sure,
before you go on. There's there's sort of what I learned in doing that research is there's kind of, you know, two levels of prostitutes. And there seems to be a lot more services for the girls who are working the streets. And I found pretty much nothing across the country for girls who are escorts, who are sort of in this life, you know, in that sort of tier of things and want to get out of it. So I'll listen to your answer off the air. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much for the call, Victor. Well,
right.
And let's take that up. I mean, is there, we say we want to help people out of this situation. Do we provide enough resources for them to do it? Teresa Flores.
And that's one of the vital parts about laws and states is that we put money into victim services, and that's a big missing piece for many states. You know, we can get that by seizing property and restitution, but a lot of these victims come to us with nothing, with no birth certificate, you know, just the clothes on their back, desperate to get out. And like you said, there's very few services in our country for that. For children that have been trafficked in this situation, there's a handful of homes, and that's it. For adults, you know, there might be a few more. But it's something that is a huge need, is getting therapeutic homes, shelters for these women up and running. And a lot of times you do see the faith-based community is the one that is starting it. But they're very few and far between. And that's going to be the deciding factor where we get these women out and get them help and new job training, things like that.
Carlene Miller, I'll let you take a crack at that question as well. And I'd also like to push it out. Are there places in this country that are doing it better, perhaps, or that at least might present a model for Indiana and other states to emulate? Carlene Miller.
Well, you know, we do have services here in Indianapolis, but the funding we've received, federal funding to provide those comprehensive services, have been for foreign-born persons. And so there's been a real missing link for U.S. citizens who are in these situations. And I think the federal funding is starting to catch up, and so next year there's going to be more funding for us to provide those services. Fortunately, in Indiana, our Department of Child Services is working to open a group home in the next few months for female victims of child exploitation, sexual exploitation. So we're starting to get there, but it's, you know, we've been doing this since 2005, and it's really difficult to put enough services together to provide adequately. Across the country, some of those cities and states that have been doing this a long time, particularly on the coasts, have obviously better programs because they've been working at it for a longer time. But I also think it requires community involvement. And as Teresa mentioned, the faith community has a good piece of this, as well as other community leaders. And we're seeing that rise here in Indianapolis.
Attorney General Greg Zeller, in terms of that question and the resources, are there enough here in Indiana? And if the question is there aren't, what do we need? What would you recommend?
Well, it goes back to my point that we really don't have very good statistics, so matching resources to the need is a little bit behind just because we haven't tracked this. Among my colleagues, the attorneys general, we are comparing notes. So some of the states that have addressed these problems and really have better information, they've led the way in some of this. So again, my friend Rob McKinnon, Washington State, that'll be here next weekend, they've done quite a bit in the Seattle area. That's a place where we use as a model. In terms of what else we need, I think the training and education that goes, again, to the law enforcement and our community leaders, but also we are going to need the ability to take victims out of their circumstance and to rescue them. So that's not an easy thing. The hardest part is to talk them out of their situation. But if they have no place to go, if they have no hope of seeing a way out, so we really have to provide the resources, and how much and what those resources are, I think, are still going to have to be built out.
I'm just going to pick up real quickly on Victor's point, though. Suppose, not necessarily a newspaper reporter, but somebody confronts this, that a woman or a child comes and says, I want out. I need help. Can you get me some help? Where should that responsible person who wants to do the right thing take that person, take that woman or child here in Indiana? I'll start with Carlene Miller on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think first off, call the hotline number.
Give it one more time.
And that is 1-888-373-7888. That's 1-888-373-7888. We've had cases across the state. And so if it's in Evansville, there are folks that work there. So if it's here, they can call us directly at the Julian Center or at Exodus, and we'll try to work with them to figure out what we can help with. But the hotline number is a good one, too.
Mm-hmm. Teresa Flores, where would you recommend that somebody who's
again, the hotline, because they know those programs. They at a touch of a button, they can tell you which places in any state, in any community, what they'll be able to refer them to.
And if someone called the Attorney General's office and said, you know, I've heard this, what would you do for them, Attorney General?
Well, actually, the head of IPATH is Abby Kuzma, mm-hmm. who's in my office. So she's been engaged in this longer than she's worked in my office. But we have people that do outreach services. We have a victims advocate in our appellate division that work with both the prosecutors and the people at the hotline and others. So we're prepared if people were to call us to get them in touch with the right places.
We are talking about human trafficking here on No Limits. We've just gotten an email question from a listener who doesn't want to be identified. It says, what do guidance counselors and others know, and I suspect I'm going to add to the question, and need to know about this? What are the avenues for help? It sounds like, Teresa Flores, you were saying if you're a teacher or whatever, you ought to be able to recognize some of the signs. What do they need to know?
This can happen to any kid. Doesn't matter, you know, where they come from. It'd be really nice for the Indiana Department of Education to be able to get training to all the teachers on this, you know, across the board, But they need to know that it can happen to any kid. If they are hanging around older kids, their grades are dropping, they're tired, they're missing a lot of school. And again, it's hard because it looks like just a normal teenage thing. But tonight I'll be sharing my personal story, and I hit upon that really hard of like how people could have seen some signs, they just didn't really realize it was that. And
where will you be sharing your
story? I'll be at Joe's Grill number 2 on East 96th Street in Fishers at 8 o'clock. Okay. And so professionals, I encourage teachers and students even to come out and see, you know, how is it that this is happening right underneath our noses?
And what is it, I'm going to ask, and this may have to be kind of the last question, but I'm going to let Teresa have the last word here as the victim. When you brought your story first to that waitress that you mentioned on the third shift, what was it about her that led you to believe this is someone I can share the story with? What were the welcoming signs there that said to you, I'm safe?
Well, first, she approached me. I didn't approach her, which is what I was talking about earlier. And she noticed the signs of a kid that looked out of place. I mean, I had pajamas on and was barefoot at 4 in the morning, you know. Oh. And she didn't just assume it was a bad kid out, you know, doing things. She knew what had been going on. And she saw me in shock. And she placed a phone call. She called the police. Oh. And so, but she also asked me something. She said, can I help you? And nobody had ever done that.
Oh.
So, and I guess I was just in such a dark despair moment that I also said, okay.
It can be as simple as that.
Yeah.
This has been a fascinating conversation. I want to thank my guests for joining us today, Attorney General Greg Zeller. It was good having you here.
It's good to be with you again.
Teresa Flores, I enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you.
Carlene Miller, it was a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you.
And next week we will be back when we'll be talking about consumer protection and avoiding scams, another theme that is Super Bowl related in a way, with a panel of consumer protection experts. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. We'll talk with you next week. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM, and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.